Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is The Herd, wherever you may be, and however you may be listening to part of the show. Listen to the show. Thanks so much for making this part of your day. Sorry, the coffee hasn't fully gotten into the system yet. Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. Colin off. He does not have, nor has anybody tested positive for COVID, but there's rules and regulations and legal mumbo-jumbo over how many people you can have in the Fox TV studios at once. So, my man's got a day off. It's not a bad life. Hey, listen, you're still going to get paid the same. You just don't have to come to work. Okay. Cool. And it's not going to count as a day off. Where do I sign up for that gig? Ryan Russillo is going to join us from The Ringer. We'll talk some football. We'll talk some... There's actually a lot of interesting football discussions, including Bill O'Brien and our knee-jerk reaction as to who's going to replace Bill O'Brien as head coach of the Texans, what actually kind of makes sense. I definitely want to get to the NBA Finals, which we got another day off today. Feels like everyone knows what's coming tomorrow. Doesn't it? I will get that with Russillo in 15 minutes. And I have identified a problem, which I believe is the Dodgers have a Lamar Jackson problem. Get to that in a moment. Let me start with this. According to Football Outsiders, the Cowboys have the easiest remaining schedule. I didn't have to be a football outsider to look at their schedule and go, God, the NFC sucks. Right? Like, it does not take... I am not a smart man, Jenny, but I do know what an easy schedule looks like. But no, like Football Outsiders, they actually do the math and do the hard work. And the Cowboys, who are a half game behind the Philadelphia Eagles, have, again, based upon four games in, the easiest schedule. Remaining games, the Giants, the Cardinals at home. Okay, Cardinals can score. They're 2-2. I'm not sure I bought the hype over them being a playoff team. I like their offense, but I don't love their defense. Then they go to Washington, who stinks. Philadelphia, who at this point really banged up, could be healthier by then. We don't know. Pittsburgh, that's a good football team. Bye week, Minnesota, as of now, one win. Washington stinks. At Baltimore, that's not an easy game. At Cincinnati, plays everybody close and just won a game. San Francisco, we don't know. Like, this is a hard one. Jimmy G's going to come back. We don't know about the rest. Like, the rest of their roster is in tatters. Obviously, they're not going to have Nick Bosa this year, but there's a lot of their other guys that could be back by then. Philly, again, don't know what their roster will look like by then, and then the Giants. Mostly, they play the NFC East. They haven't played an NFC East game yet, so you got two against the Giants and two against the Washington football team. So that's four wins, right? Like, you put us down for four. That's the thing that the Eagles screwed up most. It wasn't that the Eagles lost week one of the season when they had without four starting offensive linemen. It's that you lost in division, a game you absolutely could not lose to a bad football team. But they did. So we would all, I mean, is it okay? Am I okay saying the Cowboys defense is a joke? It's so bad. Whether they're confused by Mike Nolan's system, whether football's passed Mike Nolan by, whether they have a bad fit for his 3-4 scheme, or whether they just don't like him, or they don't play hard because they're entitled by the contracts that they have. Whatever it is, the Cowboys' defense is bad. And if I was fair, like, look, Dak has been great in these comebacks, but like, last year it was they would score on the opening drive and then they couldn't score. Now it's they're not scoring on the opening drives. They're struggling some. Sometimes they're scoring the opening drive, but they're struggling some offensively. And then you get into a, you know, 2-3 deep zone, keep everything in front, and he starts hitting crossing patterns, and now all of a sudden their offense explodes. They're not running the football the way they used to. Some of that is because their offensive line isn't what it used to be, or it hasn't been fully healthy. Number one in overall yardage, number one in passing yardage. Most of that's because they've been behind. They're terrible against the run. They're 31st in the league against the run. They've allowed the third most yards, 430 yards a game. So, look, they're on defense a lot, and they're just getting smacked by teams that run the football. And I think it's a win-win in a lose-lose for Dak Prescott, lose-lose for the Cowboys. Like, do you remember draft night? Do you remember when they went and what they did with their first-round pick? Anybody? Like, oh, yeah, CeeDee Lamb. Now, I like CeeDee Lamb. I don't like Lamb. It's very, very good. A little rosemary on top. CeeDee Lamb's awesome. Amari Cooper, I don't believe, is the true superstar number one. But when you add Michael Gallup and CeeDee Lamb, it covers up. Like, look, they're doing this without Blake Jarwin, without their starting tight end. Dalton Schultz is their tight end. What a great name. Dalton, that just sounds proper. Doesn't it? Right? Dalton Schultz. Anyway, I have no qualms with CeeDee Lamb, but when I look back to the 2020 NFL draft, and I remember that they stayed true to their board. Yeah, people are like, oh man, they stayed true to their board. They didn't reach for a need. Yeah, it kind of feels like you should have reached for a need. You mean to tell me that you couldn't either have taken a defensive player, and there were several, plenty available? I mean, you look where CeeDee Lamb went in the draft. He went 17th overall. Right? And you look at other linebackers who were available. Granted, they thought they were really good at linebacker. Obviously, in the second round, they drafted a very good corner. But this team has issues at safety, and there were the top safeties available, or you could have traded down. Instead, they stayed true to their board, and they brought sand to the beach. The rich got richer. You already have one of the highest paid running backs in the game. You have an incredibly highly paid offensive line. You end up paying Amari Cooper $100 million. You got Michael Gallup, who was a second round pick, I think, right? Third round pick? Okay. Like, did you need CeeDee Lamb? But they did. You know what they did? Are you a rims guy? Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I love rims. They add to a car. They make any car. One of my roommates in college is Desmond Mason. He had, and obviously he's 10 years in the NBA, and he's a super talented artist now, so he's rich beyond all means. So he won't mind me selling him out that he had a 75 Nova in college. Hoopty. But he had some cool rims. And look, what one of the things you don't realize when you buy rims on a car is you're like, well, it makes it look better. It does. Right? You get some 20s or some 22s instead of the stock 19s or 18s. It just looks better. But the ride's a little stiffer. And here's the thing about low-profile tires. They wear down like twice as fast. So instead of getting 25, 30,000 miles on a set of radials, you get like 10,000. So they cost more, and then you replace them more often, and the ride isn't as smooth. But what's every guy listening to The Herd, Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin, what's every guy thinking when, yeah, but they look cool? And you're right, they do. They look cool. And you know what? The Dallas Cowboys look cool because they got CeeDee Lamb. They got Amari Cooper. They got Michael Gallup. They got Ezekiel Elliott. They get down a couple scores. Boop, boop, boop. Let's put up some yards. Let's have some fun, boys. But you know what it doesn't do? It doesn't win you football games. And it's weird. We went from Dak Prescott, didn't put up great numbers, but don't worry about numbers. He wins. He's a winner. He's got that winning thing. You can't do the stat thing. What matters is winning. Okay, well, last year he had better players. And they go into Philadelphia, and in a must-win game, they couldn't win. They didn't beat any of the teams with a winning record. Guess what they haven't done this year? Beat anybody with a winning record. Right? Again, is it all his fault? Like, no. And they They brought sand to the beach, getting CeeDee Lamb to go with an already talented offensive group. So you can see that Dak Prescott walks in, you know, slaps down 5,000, 6,000 yards passing, 30-some-odd touchdowns, and is like, hey, wasn't my fault. Pay me my money. Win-win. And you know what? They might be able to moonwalk their way to a divisional title because Philadelphia is not good. Like, Nick Mullins couldn't have been worse for San Francisco when they played on Sunday night. Couldn't have been worse. And after a beautiful touchdown pass from Carson Wentz, they get a pick six, and you're like, it's over. San Francisco still had a chance to win the game. Like, Philadelphia is not a good football team. No one's arguing that. Don't give me, and then they got the Giants twice and the Washington football team twice. It's now starting Kyle Allen. At some point, they're going to give Alex Smith another shot. They don't have any players. I mean, so Dak will probably win the division, you know, with 8 or 9 wins and a super easy, super soft schedule and throw for 70,000 yards. But they're still not beating good teams. They drafted to only add to his wizardry. Then you're going to pay Dak a bunch of money and you're not going to be able to afford to fix the defense. And the cycle continues. And everything you said about Dak, well, he's a winner, went out the window. You're like, well, it's not his fault. He's putting up numbers. But no. I'm really confused because we're in between two conflicting arguments. Either the numbers do reflect how well you're playing or they don't reflect how well you're playing. But Dak Prescott gets to have it both ways. Coming up next, Ryan Russillo joins the show. Why does Deshaun Watson get a pass? Is it just because everybody doesn't like Bill O'Brien? It's a question, right? And what are we going to say when LeBron James has like 35 tomorrow night and they win his fourth NBA title, the Lakers' 17th NBA title? I'll ask Russillo. He joins me around the corner.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
RecTech is more than a grill. They're a lifestyle. It's a smart grill technology which allows for an even heat, and you can't go wrong. RecTech, built by grillers for grillers. Go to RecTech.com. That's RECTEQ.com. Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. Man, this is like getting the band back together. We got Ryan Russillo from The Ringer who joins us. I got a bunch of things to get to. Let me start with Bill O'Brien getting fired. It is weird to me that no one seems to have said, like, hey, Deshaun Watson needs to play a little bit better, right? Like, I'm not saying he stinks or, like, pull him, but he gets a huge contract. They rebuild the offensive line. Granted, trade away DeAndre Hopkins. And, you know, the one thing we all, I think, agree is Bill O'Brien's pretty good with quarterbacks, pretty good with offense. Why do you think he's escaped any sort of critique for their 0-4 start?
Because social media hates Bill O'Brien. I mean, if you did a list of, like, most targeted guys over the last couple of years.
Ooh, let's do the list. Yeah, let's do the list. What do you got?
Yeah, I mean, Harbaugh's up there
for
college football.
Sure.
I think he's the number one guy everyone roots against. I don't think there's a lot of love for Tom Herman just because, you know, hey, I thought this guy was supposed to be the guy, you know? And look, I get it. It hasn't been as good at Texas as it's supposed to be. But NFL Sunday, like anytime there's a primetime Bill O'Brien game, it was just on. And I always, look, I'm not telling you he was great, but I actually think with some of the records that he had with some of the quarterbacks before Deshaun,
yeah,
I was like, isn't this a sign of like some kind of accomplishment? But then the whole thing derails, the leadership from the top down, everybody tell you it was kind of a mess. And I just think the Bill O'Brien thing, like, it doesn't mean that Deshaun hasn't played as well as we expect, Doug, but we know how the game works. The game becomes whatever the headline thing is, the shadow casts beyond all the other possible storylines.
Yeah, but we do this thing where, like, he has a great game or makes an, like last year he made that incredible play where he got a cleat in the eye, right, and threw a touchdown pass like the next play. And we're like, well, he's great. Okay, he's great, period. And that's it. Nobody can evolve. Guys that are just okay can't get better, right? Remember Kirk Cousins couldn't win a big game. Then he wins a big game. You're like, well, that was just one. And nobody can devolve. Guys can't or plateau. And it feels like we're a little bit dated. It's even the J.J. Watt thing. Like, we still talk about J.J. Watt like he's a superstar. Like, J.J. Watt's just a good football player now. He's not Captain America like he used to be.
Yeah, but it's just kind of the job. And I know that all of us, it's kind of funny how cyclical it becomes, because it happens and then the people that do our job say it. So then it's happening, and then the people that do our jobs are like, I can't believe everybody's saying this. And it just kind of goes round and round. Like, right. The Rondo thing is one of the dumbest conversations I've heard in sports in the last 10 years. I mean, he absolutely mailed it in at the end of Boston, admitted he had stopped playing defense, goes to Dallas, gets in a huge battle with Rick Carlisle. They couldn't wait to get him out of there. Boston couldn't wait to get him out of there. The Chicago thing didn't make any sense. He disappeared in Sacramento. He wasn't good in the regular season for the Pelicans, then had like a terrific playoff run. And Lakers fans couldn't believe Vogel was still giving him minutes. And he has been huge, huge for this Lakers team. It's just another part of it. It's like, hey, how come more people didn't see this coming? They're like, well, I didn't know that Rondo was going to turn into like a really valuable player all of a sudden. And yet, because he's been really good in the playoffs in spots, it's like, oh, all you guys are doubting him. I'm like, well, of course I was doubting him, because I was watching him all those other years too, and he wasn't good.
I want to get back to basketball in a second. Let me go to tonight, Thursday Night Football. Bears, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Kind of hard to tell in the Bucs, right? Like, they got down two scores, and the Chargers did what the Chargers do, which is open the door by bad fumble, and they're without 10 of their guys. Like, is Tampa really good? Are they getting, like, where are they now in your eyes as a playoff team, Super Bowl contender?
So we knew the defense was a lot better statistically than it averaged out last year, because Winston put them in maybe one of the worst positions a quarterback's ever put his defense in the history of the game. I mean, it was that bad. But to think that Brady, who's just a workaholic, was going to be immediately, like, day one on the same page with all these receivers, we expect unreal things from him, even at 43 years old, and it's not what I saw in the beginning. But what I saw in that Chargers game was somebody that trusts his receivers and is completely, like, on the same page with them now. Like, some of those throws that he made, like the Mike Evans throw, he's making that because it's Mike Evans. It's not the route. It's not the defense. It's like, okay, I trust you a little bit more. I know what I'm working with. I don't know if he thinks that Gronk got so small that all of a sudden Gronk is Scotty Miller and he's throwing to him, thinking he's throwing to Gronk. But he hasn't targeted Gronk that much. But then I thought in the second half, you could just see some of those throws where he's really opening it up. It just felt like he was more comfortable. It felt like there was a trust there that we didn't see at the beginning of the year. So at this point, I'd be surprised if Tampa ends up not in the playoffs, because I really do think that Brady, if he stays upright and he just does a really good job of staying healthy or healthy enough to play, I buy into him. Not that I was writing him off, but, again, even that first week against New Orleans, it was like, okay, he threw a pick that we're not used to him seeing. But I loved what he saw, what we saw against the Chargers team, and I know with missing pieces, but I actually really like that Chargers defense when they're all out there.
I do too when they're all out there, but that's a big one.
Yeah.
Over-under on Philly special references tonight with Foles starting?
Thursday.
It's Joe Buck, so he'll have fun with it. But I don't think it won't be like it was ESPN and it was Levy. There would be a lot more, I feel like, because they would make him run the tape several times. Thursday, Fox game.
Probably just one, because Foles isn't playing that well. I actually still think Trubisky gets a start, even if Foles is healthy, because I think Foles is a lot like a lot of these role players that we have in basketball, where you go, oh, wait, like Brian Hoyer, all we hear about how amazing he is in practice, understands the playbook, everything. It's like, oh, well, now he has to play? Oh, wait, this isn't going as well. And it's happening with Foles. Like, this Bears team is not who they're – like, that whole you are what your record says you are. No, not always, because I don't think anybody watching this entire season of this Bears team thinks they're any good.
No, he does have, Nagy – DeFilippo, Laser, all those guys work with him before, so they trust him. They think they know what to call, what plays to call for him. I think that's a big part of it. Let me get to Dwayne Haskins. I hear and I see a lot of people at other networks, maybe even at my network, saying didn't get a fair shake. I'm like, look, two different coaching staffs thought you didn't have a good enough grasp of the playbook. His college coach said he wasn't ready. He didn't look like he's ready. And even Doug Williams last year said he didn't dive into the playbook enough. He doesn't have good feet, and he has slow eyes. So I don't understand. Like, I get that we think 11 games is enough, but it feels like it's enough to me. Where are you on whether or not he got a fair shake?
Look, I don't actually think he got enough time for a first-round pick. Like, I don't think you want to turn the page on that quickly. But a lot of times when coaches are fired and almost all of us are on the outside, and you'll say, wait a minute, why did that coach get fired? You go, you know what, if people that are there day-to-day are going, hey, it's time to move on from this guy to get a little bit more information, like, I defer to those people. So if they're in the room with everybody, and by the way, like, anybody throwing out just raw quarterback stats now, it doesn't mean anything. Like, right. It just doesn't. Like, guys are firing away at 300-yard games, I think, look terrible at times when, like, oh, great, this guy had 500 yards again, or this guy had 300 yards again. He must be awesome. Like, 300 yards doesn't mean anything anymore. It's like some of these NBA scores where you go, I think you got to just cut it off at 25% of what the actual production is, because dudes are just chucking a million threes now. So I would like to see any franchise that put the first round resource into a quarterback give him a little bit more time, and maybe it's a step back, take a step forward thing. But some of the criticism of Haskins just feels kind of, you know, specific. It becomes a race issue where I go, well, like, what's Josh Rosen's, like, what, who's he get to complain to? You know?
Yeah.
Like, I think that there are plenty of times.
By the way, look, I thought I called the Rosen thing, right, because the people I talked to. But in fairness to Josh Rosen, he starts with the Arizona Cardinals, who had the worst line in the sport. The worst line in the sport. They had a coach that and he's not mobile, and they had a coach that lasted 1 year that everybody said was in way over his head. And, like, he was poof, gone. But, again, there's no – I'm with you. It's like
– yeah, maybe he's not good, right? Maybe he's not good.
Yes.
But no one cares about – like, I just think when it comes to quarterbacks, at least for now – now, historically, I'm not going to take the other side of that argument.
Right.
Black quarterbacks are treated horribly, and it's kind of ridiculous that it took this long for people to be like, hey, maybe that guy's going to be good on Sundays. But when it comes to, well, this guy, it's happened with Cam, like, oh, Cam is only criticized because, and I'm like, wait a minute, what? Like, does anybody want to talk to Romo? Does anybody want to talk to Jay Cutler?
No, it's the position. Johnny Manziel, Baker Mayfield, right? Baker Mayfield has a good first year, bad second year, right? A slow start. It's the nature of the position now. We can't go. If we go back 30, 40 years, we could have that discussion. Now it's simply about how are you playing based upon the position. That position is the most critiqued position in all of sports.
Yeah, that's. I just think there's times where it's fair, and most times it's obsessive. And I don't think that, and I really think it has more to do with being around the guy. And I'm not even talking specific to Haskins. You know, I really think that, you know, it's weird to think like a coaching staff would just go, like, coaching staff get stuff wrong. None of us are arguing with these guys, get it right all the time.
Sure.
But, you know, I don't know. I don't know that Haskins was awesome. You know, I don't know that he was, but it still seems quick.
There's something weird, though, going on there, because I don't know if you saw this. He's not even the second string quarterback. He's the third string quarterback, and they didn't have him take snaps yesterday. And then there's video, and this is a little weird thing for me. All the other quarterbacks, all our three quarterbacks, are wearing the maroon pants, except for Dwayne Haskins. He's wearing the white pants out of practice, and it's just one of those things where when you're in the coach's doghouse and you're doing kind of your own thing, you're on your own program. Nothing ticks a coaching staff off more than you're doing your own thing. You're running. Oh, you're the white pants guy. Great. Got it. You know, like, you just got benched. Buy in, get the play, you know, figure out the playbook and stay ready. That to me, I saw something in that video, which I don't know if other people caught. Ryan Russillo joining us. You can obviously hear him over at The Ringer. Let me get to tomorrow night. I feel like I know what's coming, right? You give him an extra day off. He hasn't had any offensive explosion in this. Like, again, this is what your raw statistics argument, right? Like, statistically, LeBron's played really, really well, but he's been good, not completely and thoroughly dominant, not even necessarily the go-to. Turnovers are also a statistic that people seem to not pay attention to, and it's the reason that Miami won one game and the reason they almost won the last game. But he has been great in these deciding games. Everybody I've talked to down there just wants to go home. He's going to close out, you know, win another NBA championship. How should we take this as somebody who studies and knows the sport?
What, the accomplishment of him getting another title?
Yes, in the bubble, against the Heat. How do you take it?
Well, we know what's going to happen because, you know, in the beginning when this whole process was being introduced to us, it was, okay, well, you know, no matter what, there's going to be an asterisk on this. And you just go, okay, well, that doesn't seem fair. Like, whoever wins the title under these circumstances, that's what's going to happen. But then it swung so hard the other way that it's like, this is going to be the toughest championship ever won. And you're like, ah, I don't know. They're playing the Heat. The NBA Finals. You know, like, can we include, I mean,
playing the Warriors who won 73 games with a 3-1 lead and having to win game 7 in Oakland, kind of with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson?
It's not even close.
Like, kind of feels harder. I don't know.
Right. I get that the bubble is inconvenient. And look, if you bought into the bubble argument that this is the toughest of all time, then you're just going to hit me with isolation days and numbers of days in a hotel and a resort. And look, I've been to Disney a few times. I wouldn't want to be there for 3 months straight. The Heat, especially an undermanned Heat, I mean, this was a team that was still projected to win like 49 games if you went over an 82-game season. And the more I started thinking about it, because I was really impressed with the Heat. I was impressed with their depth, Bam's growth, Butler taking on this alpha role, Hero and Duncan Robinson giving you buckets on certain nights. I kept thinking, like, wait a minute, what are they going to do with Anthony Davis? And they try that zone, which is actually the dumbest thing you can do. Like, it just proves how bad I think team, and I'm not going to say it's coaching, but how uncomfortable players, young players, are against the zone. Because actually, like, once you figure it out, I think you would know this, it's not that hard to score against it, but it just freaks teams out, even NBA teams. And when they try to do it against the Lakers, you're like, oh, wait, you have 6'9 LeBron catching in the middle of all of this and making passing decisions to Anthony Davis, who's running baseline against a 6'9 or an inverted front line or back line where they had their bigs up front and they had their guards on the baseline. You go, okay, this isn't going to work. And so, I think that there are circumstances that we know are unprecedented for this, but I can't sign off on the idea that this is the greatest or toughest championship to ever accomplish.
You know, what's interesting to me is I've heard people say, well, this is the beginning of another dynasty for the Lakers. And like, well, look, I think it's a great accomplishment. And I think his leadership and bouncing back from how bad the juju was last year in that building is with the Lakers is big. But again, like, they didn't play the Clippers. Next year, they probably won't be so fortunate. The Warriors took the season off. My guess would be the Nuggets feel like a team on the rise, right? The Mavericks are going to be the new Rockets, right? They won't actually win because they don't play defense, but they'll still win a bunch of games because they're super talented on offense. And then the other side, like, dude, the Nets are going to be good next year if Kyrie doesn't ruin them.
Wow.
Possibility. Right? 50-50 shot. Talented, let's just say talented. You would think the Celtics are going to be better as Jason Tatum and those young guys get better. And Milwaukee's still a problem if they ever play them. Like, I think the idea that this is the beginning of something when LeBron, this may be the last year he's able to dial it up as often as he's able to dial it up. It's just reasonable at 35 years old. I kind of think we should appreciate it while we got it.
Yeah, I'm blown away by this guy, okay? So, you know, you're hesitant to ever say anything negative because then it turns you into like, oh, wait a minute. Like, the other one that I hear is like, what does it mean for him winning a title with his third team? This is ridiculous. The lead guy, there's no comp for this, because that was the momentum behind Kawhi. Like, you know why this is happening? Because nobody ever did this. You think if Magic, well, Magic didn't have to go anywhere because his team made 9 finals in the 12 prime years that he had. But
right,
what if Bird looked around at 88 and said, I'm out of here? You know, like, nobody has done this historically. So, to say it's a greater accomplishment to jump from team to team and win all these titles, like, it's not a negative, but I don't think it's not unprecedented because nobody else could pull it off. It's unprecedented because nobody else did it.
Right.
So I'm sitting here watching him. I actually think he's played better maybe than you did in the finals because he's just controlling things in a way that's subtle. Like, it was a really weird first half of game 4 where it felt like everybody was kind of just off, or at least Miami had clogged the game up enough. But what LeBron does when he decides, okay, you can see these moments. You saw him in the fourth quarter against Houston. You saw him in these moments where he's hitting shots against Denver. And you're seeing specific times where he's like, okay, now I'm going to start driving. And then it just kind of just destroys the will of the opponent. So it's not just the raw near triple-double numbers from him. I think he's just having these moments in games where he takes over, and it's unbelievable that this guy enters the league in 2003 and he's still doing this.
No. If I led you to believe otherwise, I'm wrong in that. That's the true genius to him. It's a lot. There's a little bit like Brady there, right? That's how I started the show, kind of comparing it, which is like, you kind of control everything. And then when you're feeling it and you find your spots, now all of a sudden you still have the talent to kind of take over. And look, there's a reason Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is open late in the fourth quarter to hit those shots, or that, you know, Rondo is able to get layups, because you've got to pay attention to LeBron and to Anthony Davis. But, you know, he's responsible for Anthony Davis's carrying the team at times, quarters one through three in most games. And then LeBron can take over when everybody else is tired. He has that kind of well of energy that he saved up. Now, he's unbelievable at controlling things and pacing himself and knowing, but just there is going to be a point in time where he's going to go to the well and there's nothing there. We're not there yet, but that day is coming at some point.
Yeah, I don't know when. I mean, you're right. It is coming. And I would even say there's moments. I remember there was a time during the Denver series, because there was this other thing going around, like, oh, he's getting incredibly tired. He's getting tired.
Yes.
And I would go through all of their fourth quarters and be like, a lot of these games are already decided, or they let somebody back in late, so the score becomes like a little misleading. So I don't know that the fourth quarters matter as much as maybe you think. And then he had I think Torrey Craig was on him, baseline spin dunk over him.
Yeah.
And granted, it doesn't mean like, oh, yeah, he's just as athletic as he was at 25 because he just dunked on somebody. That's not what I'm saying, but those bursts are still there. I also think the Rondo part of this is a huge part of the team's success, because I thought there were times I'm like, what is he doing out there? Like, he looks unplayable. And I think LeBron having somebody else that he trusts just to bring the ball up, I know that can sound stupid.
No.
You can speak to this better than I can, but just trusting that, hey, that other guy will initiate something good and I trust him, as opposed to Kuzma jacking a shot up. Although Kuzma's actually played better than I thought he would. You know, Pope, who's not really a creator on his own. Caruso, who you probably don't want shooting a ton, although you probably, you know, like his toughness and all that stuff. Just having somebody with Rondo's resume where you go, okay, you can get us into our action and I can kind of maybe cut off of this. I think that's a huge, huge, it's just a relief for LeBron to not have to have that burden every possession up the court.
Ryan Russillo, check him out at The Ringer. Follow him on social media as well. Ryan, great stuff, man. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Doug.
Let's get to John Goulet with the news. Herd Line News. Go, John.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
Al 9000.
There's a lot of buttons in here.
There's a lot of buttons.
Yeah. So yesterday we may have learned why Bill O'Brien was fired so early in the season by the Texans. The report came out that J.J. Watt and his former head coach had a verbal exchange at practice a couple of weeks ago before their loss to the Steelers. Sources confirmed to ESPN that this blow-up happened, and the incident was the moment Bill O'Brien lost the team. They asked Watt about it yesterday. He said, quote, "I'm not going to talk about what happened at practice or what conversations were had or whatever it may be. The situation is what the situation is, and we right now have a fresh start, and we had a good practice today, and we're looking forward to Jacksonville." That is as close to confirming that story as you can without saying, yep, that totally happened, because he didn't say it didn't happen. If things had really gotten that bad, is it possible the Texans could actually have a bounce back? They had a tough schedule, and they hated their coach. I mean, that seems like a prime candidate to me to roll off.
They're not a bad team, and they have a big-time quarterback. And I know people are like, well, you just said their quarterback. No, I'm saying he hadn't played that well. That's a good reason why they're... Yeah. Yeah. They're better than Jacksonville. They should win this weekend.
Sure.
And it should be a galvanizing moment. And Romeo Crennel has experience. He's been a head coach before. Like, so they should play with great energy. Then we don't know what's going to happen next week with Tennessee. Then they get Green Bay. That probably won't go well. They got Jacksonville twice. They still have Detroit. They had Chicago. They do not have an easy schedule. It's one of the things that comes with winning their division. Not as hard as they had. Could you see a bounce? Are they going to win games? Yes. Are they going to win 9 or 10 games? I don't think so, but I don't know. Yes, I think they're a prime candidate for a bounce back, specifically against Jacksonville, and then we'll see what happens with the Tennessee game.
I know Bill O'Brien is famous for yelling at stars. His biggest highlight in New England was yelling with Tom Brady, but man, I don't know that I'm going after J.J. Watt. He's just so beloved by people. I don't know if that's might be the one guy you don't go after on
you lose J.J. Watt, you lose the locker room.
And that's
right?
Reportedly what happened.
Yes.
And finally, the Chiefs will visit the Raiders this weekend. And because they're in the same division, we refer to that as a rivalry. Derek Carr, though, disagrees. He told the Las Vegas Review-Journal, quote, "If we're being honest, to make it a rivalry, we have to win some games." Carr is 2-10 against the Chiefs in his career. And the last three times they've played, the combined score is Chiefs 103, Raiders 22. The domination by the Chiefs in this division has just been crazy. And it's not even just Patrick Mahomes, but when he's there, they're just, they don't have any competition. They don't have a rival, do they?
No. No, I mean,
even Baltimore can't be a rival to them.
No, but that's in conference, not in division.
Sure.
I think they've beaten the Chargers, I'm going to say something like 17 out of the last 18 times.
You would know.
And yeah, and the last one, that was that crazy overtime win on like Thursday night or something a couple years ago when the Chargers were red hot. Yeah, I mean, like Denver's, ever since Peyton Manning retired, they've been bad. Obviously, the Raiders have been bad. And that's part. The Raiders have been bad for most 20 years. But that's part of it. They've been, that's one of the reasons that they've been so successful under Andy Reid is, a lot like Bill Belichick, they've dominated their division.
That was the key to the Patriots dynasty.
Sure. Some of that is the ineptitude of the Raiders, the ineptitude of the Chargers at times, the ineptitude of the Broncos since Peyton has retired.
Yep.
And some of that is Andy Reid and the Chiefs got it going on. And that's John Goulet with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
The Dodgers snuck out a win last night, but there's cause for concern in their pursuit of a World Series title. I'll tell you what that cause is upcoming next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Seeing the check engine light turn on can give anyone anxiety, but with coverage from CarShield, you won't dread unexpected repairs. Get coverage today and see why CarShield cars go further. Visit CarShield.com, use the code HERD, save 10%, and a deductible may apply. The Dodgers won last night. It was a really, really exciting baseball game. And I understand that Colin, like me, my show follows this show on most Fox Sports Radio affiliates, as well as in your iHeartRadio app, The Doug Gottlieb Show. We don't talk a ton of baseball until you get to the very, very meat of the playoffs. And maybe, though, you get, I mean, we could have a dream scenario. You already have the A's. Mike Fiers plays for the A's. He was the former Astro who turned in the Astros. You have A's, Astros, and then potentially Yankees, Astros, but the Yankees are down 2-1. And then either Yankees, Dodgers in the World Series or Astros, Dodgers in the World Series. Any we would absolutely take. Yankees, Dodgers, best ratings, best storylines, Yankees, Astros. I mean, Dodgers, Astros, excuse me. So the Dodgers technically won last night. And look, I'm just going to say it. They ain't winning the World Series with that bullpen. And I don't know what changes you can make, right? Like, if you haven't been paying attention, Kenley Jansen hasn't been the same since the World Series a couple years ago. Last night, he got threw a ton of pitches last night, right? I think he threw 30. So, which I think is the most he'd thrown all year long. 31 was the most he'd thrown all year long. But gave up 3 hits, 2 earned runs, only struck out 1. But he just, the fastball is not the same. The cutter doesn't have, the cutter does not have the same life. And when your cutter doesn't have the same life, as was pointed out on TV, they're going to hit it and hit it hard. So they had to use, you know, Joe Kelly to try and get that one last out. And he did it and got the save, but walked 2 in the process. And that just does not feel like, how are you going to win 9 games without somebody coming and shutting the door? Anybody? It's like watching the Ravens. I like the Ravens and how they play. I love their defense when they get after it, their running game. But if you can't come from behind in a regular season or a playoff game, how do you expect to win a Super Bowl? Lamar Jackson has literally never won a football game as a starting quarterback in the NFL when his team has trailed at the half. Every time his team has led, he's won. Every time his team has trailed, he's lost. How do you expect to win a Super Bowl if you can't do that? How do you expect to win a World Series if your closer doesn't have juice and you're left with Joe Kelly, who instead of throwing high 90s, is throwing mid-90s, which I'm told leads to bad things happening. The Dodgers are limping their way to what could be another World Series appearance. I don't see them winning with that back end of the bullpen. You know, Tom Brady has 6 rings. LeBron's on his way to his 4th ring. There's something they have in common, which I feel like should be given more respect. I'll share with that with you next. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is The Herd.